Hello, everybody. I am Wes.
And I'm Michelle.
Welcome to 12-Sided Talks. Tonight, we are going to be talking all about Gumshoe, Sword of the Serpentine, and Eversync, one of our favorite games, and one that we've recorded quite a bit. We've done three at this point, and we're going to be doing more because we really enjoy it. The book is by Kevin Culp and Emily Dresner. I wanted to make sure I said it. I looked at it again because I'm like, it's Dresner. Thank you, Bowman, who's in chat, for letting us know that it sounds good. We have been having gremlins in our system, and it's been not the greatest. So the first thing that we want to do is talk about Gumshoe in general. So, Michelle, what are some of the things you like about Gumshoe? You've played it a bunch of times.
Yeah, and not just with Swords of the Serpentine, because of
right.
Fear itself. And I've done, what was the other one we did?
Dead Drop, which was Knight's Black Agent. I think those are the three. We've done a lot of Fear itself as well.
Yeah, and I really like it as a system.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very straightforward. For me, if you want to dive into the story, if you're not there for the crunch, and don't get me wrong, there are games where I absolutely love crunch, but if you're not there for the crunch and you just want to dive into story, it really lends itself to that.
Yeah.
And that's what I like.
Yeah, I like the fact that they really focus on investigation. It's the core of, and if you think about it, there are combat games, and then a lot of everything else is pretty much skill-based investigation games. And on the investigation side, the rules have been lacking. It's been spot hidden, trying to find the right clue. If you don't find the clue, the GM has to hide it somewhere else for you to find. And they rely on dice rolls for clues. And it just doesn't, in my opinion, work really well. And I've taken a lot of stuff from Gumshoe and plugged it into Call of Cthulhu because it just works.
Yeah, and I like the flexibility, because when you have games that list a ton of skills, sometimes you have to do something that doesn't fit under any of those skills. And then you have to make these decisions of, oh, is this under this thing or that thing? And nothing quite fits. And what I like about Gumshoe is that the skills are more general. And if it fits in there, then it fits
in
there.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
I remember GURPS having something like 75 or 100 skills just in the core book alone. Yeah. And if you didn't have whatever specific skill, if you had science, you'd have to pick, am I botanist? You had to pick the specific thing. And I get that there are people out there that really like that kind of detail in their games. And it's very much a play the system to play the game kind of situation. But for APs like us, it doesn't work. It's a little too restrictive. If we were doing a game like GURPS, and we've done GURPS before, but we've cut down like way down on how many skills and stuff, it would just slow you down to a crawl. And then I'd cut out half of it anyway.
Yeah. But for home games, for con games, for things like that, games like that absolutely are fun and have their place.
Yeah.
But for an AP, it's a disaster. It's a disaster.
One good story I have, I hadn't played second edition for a long time, D&D, and this guy was playing D&D, but he was using all the rules, like every single rule. We were doing hex crawl, the whole thing. And he was doing a long, campaign, and it was fun. But by the end of we're first level characters. By the end of the first game, we had lost most of our stuff. So we had like barely any clothes on. We were running away from wolves. We got stuck up in a tree. It was just ridiculous. Every single thing that could go wrong had gone wrong. So those games can be a lot of fun. I know that doesn't, getting run up a tree by a bunch of wargs or whatever they're called might not sound fun, but to me, that's, failure is fun. But Gumshoe definitely allows the GM and the players to be flexible. If you walk into a room and go, hey, I've got this particular investigation skill, instead of worrying about whether or not you have to make a roll or whatever, you just get it.
So it keeps you from that analysis paralysis, right? Where when you're creating a character, and if you know the GM, you know where to put your points and skills.
Yeah.
If you don't know the GM, it's a crapshoot. And you could put points in a skill that you never use.
Mm-hmm.
And not have points in a skill that you really needed. And
yeah.
What I like about Gumshoe is that it, again, it you have that flexibility. And even if you have 1 point in it, you have that ability to do X, Y, Z.
You're absolutely right. And I wanted to mention now, because it crossed my mind. But yeah, we're doing an entire show on Gumshoe and Sword of the Serpentine and everything else because we love the system. Palgrain Press isn't paying us to do this or anything else. We're not a huge show, obviously, yet. One day we shall be, but not yet. But we love the system. We love the people over at Palgrain. They have been very nice to us over the years. And Kevin in particular, who co-wrote the book, has been awesome. I actually, before we ran the first Serpentine game, he was gracious enough to get on a Zoom call. I think this was the end of the pandemic when we did Blades of Eversync. I can't remember, but I think it was, or right in the middle of it. And he was gracious enough to jump on and do a small, hey, let me show you how this is going to work, and ran me through a scenario so I understood the system and everything else. And it was really cool. I really appreciate that kind of thing from game designers. It's when they're willing to talk about their game and kind of be there for you when you're actually running the thing for you, for the podcast or whatever else. Let's focus in on, and we'll go over the other Gumshoe games that we've done in the past as well at some point. We'll probably hit on them maybe a little later, but right now let's talk about Sword and the Serpentine and why it's such a cool setting. What are some of the things you like as a history nerd?
I really enjoy the whole feel of it. And it's not so much from a history standpoint. It's that history mixed with
right.
all sorts of like fantasy elements, but not really being fantasy.
So Ren Faire. Not just kidding.
But I like the swashbuckling element of it. I love the fact that Denari is so present as a goddess. And because most of the time when you play in fantasy or play anything with gods and goddesses, they're not, unless it's an Otherworld game, they're not terribly interactive.
Yeah. And in the Otherworld games, they're too interactive.
They're too interactive. It's like, go back to the celestial plane.
Leave us alone.
But I like that she is so involved and once a year walks the street and gives people blessings and whatnot. So I think it's a very cool concept. I also like the concept of the fact that the city is sinking and it's always sinking, hence the name Eversync. So they just keep building. It doesn't dawn on them to move.
Yeah.
Just keep building on what has sunk. And I just find that very humorous and wonderful.
It helps the economy, right? It keeps the building guilds in the gold, or denarii, as it were. I think all of our games have been centered around denarii, too. There's been some element of denarii in all of our games. I really enjoy the ghost statues, the spirit statues.
Yeah.
Dorklord Canada in the chat is saying, have you heard of the word? Have you heard of the good word of God? Yeah, way too often and from all of them. Exactly. Move where? I know that Kevin had talked about expanding the setting. I mean, in the entire world, there's all of these different nations that he touched on. So I'm excited to see if they actually expand it out from just the city and do more with those areas. I know he also talked about possibly doing ancestries, so like elves and stuff like that. I think that would be interesting. I think Kevin's a really good writer, and so I'm excited to see what that would look like. I have no idea.
He uses our ideas about the library system.
Yeah, our library system was pretty cool. Everywhere else is not Eversync and therefore bad. I agree with that. I look at the setting. It feels like an homage to Discworld. Like it's a bit of Ankh-Morpork in there.
Yeah, there's a little bit in there, and
yeah,
just enough that you get the reference. But it's its own thing.
But there's definitely the, if you can make it at Ankh-Morpork, you can make it anywhere. But why would you, like,
exactly?
Why bother? I don't know. I hope that they come out with more. Obviously, Pelgrim Press is a smaller publishing company, and they have a lot of different IPs that they put out stuff for, and Trail of Cthulhu, Knight's Black Agent, and Serpentine, and a few others that I'm blanking on, Fear itself. And so they're not like pushing books. Oh, 13th Age as well. But they're not pushing out books, which is a good thing. I think companies that try to put out a book a month is not a good thing. But I know that we might be waiting a little while for the next book to come out, but I know that it'll be worth the wait. So
yeah, but quality over quantity, definitely.
Ankh-Morpork and Lamar. Yeah, that's a very...
The biggest influence is starting out, yeah.
Yeah, so Chad is talking about...
You do get that feel.
Yeah, you do. What else do I... Oh, the swans. I really enjoy the thought of swans just beating the shit out of you if you try to break into some bank or whatever.
Like that's your security system.
Swans attacking you randomly. That's just...
I remember taking a group of students. They weren't swans. These were geese, but very similar in their behavior. I took this group of students to Austria, and we are touring, and we're at this lake, and it's the lake right across the house that they used in The Sound of Music when they did the shot from the lake of the house. And so they're showing us the house, and there's these geese not too far from us. And one of my students is walking over and goes... and starts like heading towards them, and this other student and I go, it was like something out of a movie. Oh, don't do it. Because he had never been around geese before. He did not know how vicious they could be.
Yeah, geese and swan are just the honey badgers of the avian. The first time I read through the book, and I was like, wow, yeah, you're right. Swans would make great security. In the city also, they have a lot of different, I guess, factions. They have the Triskaidane, which kind of is this government secretive. That runs, and they're very secretive. Whenever I start a new campaign, I always come up with a new set of Triskaidane, and each of their members is pulled from one of these other, so like the nobility, the ancient nobility, or the merchants, or it's actually the Mercanti, or the Thieves Guild. There's... What I like about that particular setup is it's built in connections, and you have a good connection with one or two, and you have a bad connection with another. So if you're in the commoners, you might have a bad connection with the nobles or the thieves guild or the city watch. And so those things just add to the flavor of the city and the politics, because it does have that Renaissance feel to it as well.
Yeah.
And the Machiavellian. Like
actual Renaissance.
Renaissance, yeah. Not the fair. No, that joke was over, so I'm just going to leave it in the past. I said my Renaissance fair joke, and I'm done.
I know, I was saying it now, so I made it better.
Of course you did. Of course. So who's your favorite of these factions now that you've played a bunch of games?
Oh, I think the Thieves Guild.
Yeah. You've been an assassin and a thief a couple of times.
Yeah, I was a monk, an assassin, and a thief. Although being a monk was fun because he was a warrior monk.
That was the first game, right?
Yeah, that was the first one. But I do like the idea of the Thieves Guild because they are everywhere, absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
They touch absolutely every walk of life in the city. And I'm sure the Mercanti are the same in that.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, in a way, but
they're the venture capitalist of Eversync.
But the Thieves Guild, you have an inn everywhere, and that's fun to exploit that.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I really, and I think Emily was the one that came up with the idea. And remember, we had interviewed them before we did our first show. I think Emily came up with the idea of the ancient nobility eating off gold plates, but not having any money or not being able to uphold.
Yeah, not thinking to sell the gold plates so that they could keep their mansions.
Right, exactly. It's one of those things where it's status over actual comfort. Like, I could sell all this stuff and probably live decently, but then a Marcani is going to come in and buy my place in Adderhall, and I don't want to lose my mansion or whatever.
It's something that makes me think of the dollar princesses at the turn of the century, late 19th, early 20th century, where you had all these really wealthy American families who wanted legitimate status, or quote unquote legitimate status. And then you had actual nobility in England who had no money. And so they would arrange these marriages with wealthy American socialites. So they would get a title, and then the English noble would get the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny and weird to think about. And it goes back to, Bowman in the comments is saying poor quality food on gold plates. And absolutely. When you think about all of these different groups and how they interact with each other, it really gives you just unlimited bullshit to throw at players. And then they have unlimited bullshit to throw back at you. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I also enjoy... So mechanically, the way that it works is you have investigation skills. When you go into a scene, if you have an investigation skill that is basically connected to a clue that's in that scene, the GM will just give you that clue. They won't make you do any rolls or anything like that. And then you're free to interpret that particular skill instead of trying to figure out, like, oh, did I miss something? You know what you have, and you go from there. So a lot of the skills, like I believe leechcraft is one of them. I'm going to look some up right now. What do you think about the investigation stuff? Why I look this up real quick.
Like I said before, I love the flexibility of it. And I like the fact that you don't have to min-max.
Yeah.
Because I know min-maxing has a bad name, but there are some games where you have to do a little bit if your character's going to survive.
Yeah. Like Pathfinder. You have to do it.
A little min-maxing.
If you don't look up what's the build that's not going to make me completely pointless in 3 to 5 levels.
I should write a blog post or something. The case for min-maxing.
The case for min-maxing. From rules lawyer, Michelle Otis.
Well, I'm not really a rules
lawyer. I know, but I'm just saying for the bit. If you're going to do a case for, then you have to be right.
Min-maxing.
Okay, so basically they have, for the investigation skills, they have like city secrets, felonious intent, which is fun. That one's a fun one.
I like city secrets too, because then, oh, there's a secret passageway here.
Yeah. I'd like to spend this.
I happen to know about.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that GMs have to realize about Gumshoe even more than any other game. You are a fan of your players. You are trying to challenge them, especially if it's a horror game. If you're playing Trail of Cthulhu or Knight's Black Agent, be rough, go for it, throw stuff at them. But when you throw that stuff at them, you want them to win. You want them to get past whatever that obstacle is. I'm a firm believer in, even though if you listen to the show, it might seem like I'm like, ooh, it's a horror show. So it might seem like everything is, people are going to die constantly. Sometimes they do, but it's more of a, this is the vibe we're going for, but I really hope they make it out. I really hope they get through this. We'll see what happens. So with Sword and the Serpentine, You're absolutely right. Like City Secrets or Felonious Intent or whatever, the players say, hey, I want this thing to happen, and I'm willing to spend a point. You don't have to spend the points to get the clues, but you can spend the points to make cool shit happen.
And that's what it's all about, is making cool shit happen.
Making cool shit happen. Yeah, and then Spirit Sight. So our latest Serpentine game was, and we've had Spirit Sight before, but our latest one was Candlestick Crimes. And it's a bunch of thieves who are trying to rip off these not bright, rich people. And one of them has Spirit Sight, and her dead mother keeps popping up and talking to her all the time. And for me, that's just so much fun. Anytime I can do an NPC mom, I'm really happy.
One of their characters has a foreign ridiculous luck.
Wow.
Coincidence favor him always. And I love that, because ridiculous is so much fun. That's the one thing that no other game, at least that I've played, has had other than GURPS. And that's weirdness magnet.
Yeah.
They had it as a disadvantage, right? But that
wasn't a disadvantage for the GM.
No. But weirdness magnet, I always would laugh because everybody knows that person in real life who weird stuff only happens to them. Everyone else leads a fairly normal life, but that person, the weird stuff always happens to them. And ridiculous luck is one of those where you know somebody who, no matter what, they are going to land on their feet. Why? Because they have ridiculous luck.
And sometimes deep down inside, you dislike them just a little bit.
You dislike them for it, but man, you got to admire that ability.
I just got laid off. Phone rings immediately. Oh, hey, yeah, sure. You need me to work for you? I don't remember applying for this job, but okay.
Yeah. Oh, at double my old salary?
Okay, yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I'll take all of that. I love, I'm going to say this wrong, the rumors one. My tongue cannot handle that word, but it's a fun investigation skill. Just talking crap about somebody in the market and spending some points to make that rumor go throughout and cause damage. That's the other thing, the whole sway versus warfare. There are not a lot of games. Oh, Bowman says he likes laws and traditions. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. The rumors, yeah. Hyper Smurf is saying that the rumors are definitely their personal favorite as well. I think that having sway, so being able to talk to someone in battle and hurt their morale, versus I have a knife and I'm going to stab you, and having them work the same but have separate skills and things that you use. And then it also, I think that sometimes players, when put on the spot to do interactions, it's sometimes easier if there are mechanics for you to fall back on than just, all right, how are you going to tell this guard to go take a flying leap and go? And then they have to sit there and have this. You want to interact, but you also can help them out with the mechanics, I think. And I like that.
Yeah, I remember in that one episode where Pooja used sway to damage someone's morale so badly that they just went away. Like, that was it. They're like, oh, you talked mean to me.
So I need to, in chat, the Hyper Smurfs put, I have a knife and I'm going to stab you. And then it totally sent me a thing like, oh, are you going to allow them to say this? And I need to go in and ease back on the monitor thing just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just, hey, it's, some stuff is all right. It's okay.
But Hyper Smurf, you are right that it is a valid sway attack. You may not actually be able to attack them with that knife, but telling them you can and convincing them.
Yeah, exactly.
Is a whole different story.
You sway them. You just, I don't have a knife, but I've got a stick and it's pointy. But you just, you do really well and you roll. The other thing is on the general side of it. So you have general skills that you can use that everybody has. If you put up to 8 points in a skill, you get these, I guess they're called perks or cherries or whatever, that do special things like where'd they go? Or so like stealth, if you put 8 points in, you get this like really cool bonus maneuver that you can do. Yeah, Bowman just put maneuver system. And the thing is that I really enjoy that part of it as well. When you've got the ability to, you're like, I really want to be the best thief with the most stealth. And I get these really cool adds to my skills and they're going to give me a bonus just by having enough points in it.
Are you looking at?
Oh yeah. I'm just looking at the skills and everything. Oh, they're called talents. So if you have bind wounds, you can heal yourself. If you have enough points, if you have 8 points, you can heal more. And there's just different cool things.
A great attack of just because I was thinking about having a knife and not really knowing how to use it. And if that failed somehow, you say, but I have this. And you raise your arms and there's like a ton of swans behind you.
That's so anime. That would be such an anime attack. There better be like high like energy music behind you and the city turns into a smear of paint, just like a cut scene that they do and all of these swans.
You just see the swans behind the person and then you see the face of the villain and they're like their pupils get all small and they turn white. That would be fun.
Or just the next
in my back pocket.
Exactly. The next scene is just armor and stuff laying around and swans just walking and nothing else. Yeah, that would definitely be an anime moment for sure. So we touched upon Eversink a little bit when we were talking about the city sinking and the different allegiances that you can have with the groups. And one other thing is every part of the city, there's different districts. And my favorite district is probably the Tangle, because it is just, it's where it's like a den of thieves and just the lower income where all the common people are at. And I love the vibe of that particular, the way that they wrote it out is pretty cool. So are you responding to chat?
Yeah, I was responding to chat because this is what happens to me on Twitch. I try to find an emote and I can't see the details on the little like images. And so I end up never finding the right emote. And so then I just put LOL.
Yep.
Such is my life.
Such is the bespeckled life of a streamer. So I was talking about, what do you think your favorite area is in the city? I was talking about the Tangle. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Dorkler Canada put up a good one.
I see it. I think the Tangle definitely is the most interesting.
Yeah.
Because it has, everybody has to pass through there at some point. It's a busy place, but it's also a great
place. It's the colon of Eversink.
It's the colon of Eversink.
Everyone has to pass through there at some point.
Ew.
Thank you.
I like the Tangle because I'm ignoring you now.
Okay.
I like the Tangle because it has so many different places to duck and hide, and intrigue is afoot all the time in the Tangle, and I like that.
Yeah, I think it's the whole real people doing real jobs, just trying to survive. That and Harbor Approach, which is the work area. So those are, I think overall, the city is really built well. Eversink and Quarantine are in my top probably 5 settings that I enjoy reading about. And I, as someone who writes a lot and writes my own material and stuff, I appreciate how much effort and time has gone into that particular setting. It's really well done. So yeah, it's
very thoughtfully developed.
Hyper Smurf in the comments is saying Harbor Approach has Storm Hall, a trendy district with rich Mercanti who want to live in Adderhall. Yeah. Oh, the Adderhall.
Any of the nobles to sell.
Yeah, they can't convince the. And then we were saying that earlier about the, hey, you could sell all this shit and be rich, and Mercanti would buy your house in a minute but you can't let go of that real estate, even though it keeps sinking in the ground.
And because the real estate is tied to the title.
Yeah, yeah.
And no matter how poor you are, you're going to hang on to that title.
And what's funny is, like, the nobility don't really have, all they have is the title, but it really doesn't do anything mechanically in the system or in the setting unless they're part of the Triskaidane. So you have all of these nobles who are like, yes, I'm an ancient part of the ancient nobility, but it's, I wonder if there's Eversink tourists that come in. It's like England, they come in and they see the royal family who doesn't have anything but their titles and their riches. Of course, they're not poor. It's that situation where they don't have as much power as a normal nobility in a feudal state would have. But yeah, they just don't want to get rid of anything.
Mechanically, no, they're no different than anyone else in Eversink. But story-wise, they absolutely are. Because let's face it, City Watch is going to believe someone who's part of the ancient nobility over someone who's not.
Right.
Or they're going to be less suspicious of somebody who is in really nice clothing. And even if it does have a little bit of tearing at the seams.
Yeah. Yeah. And chat is agreeing with that. Pretty much the prestige of the ancient nobility tied to the golden contract of Denari. The golden contract was what was signed when the original city was founded after the fall of the serpent people. So obviously I like this city a lot since I know all of that. Yeah, I think for me personally, Gumshoe is just a great system and Swords and Serpentine is a great setting. Let's talk about some of the other Gumshoe games that we've played. We've done a lot of Fear Itself we've done probably 4 Fear Itselves at this point. And yeah. I think this year I would like to do a Fear Itself for Halloween again.
Yeah.
I think that would be fun. And if we're going to do that, we have to record it relatively soon.
Yes.
But Fear Itself is a game where you're playing basically just normal people. It's a survival horror game and it's great for one shots. You're playing a cop or the teenager or the sorority girl or whatever.
I only survived one of the ones we did.
Maybe yeah. Two. Yeah. We don't want to spoil.
Did not survive the other ones.
Yeah. People die. It's a survival night, Friday horror night kind of game. So if you haven't, I think Ashwood's my favorite.
That one was really fun.
Yeah, very that creepy, one. That was very fun.
I like a good creep factor.
We did Ashwood. We did The Witness, which was the one in Mexico, Oaxaca. And then what was the third one? There was a third one and I'm blanking.
I don't remember.
I know. Oh, now it's going to bug me. We've also done Knight's Black Agent, which was really fun. And what I love about Knight's Black Agent is the fact that it gives you the GM all of these ideas for vampires. You can be a space vampire. You can have space vampires. You can have this vampire. They can have these powers or this. And so you can really mix it up and come up with something that's a little bit like that's original for your game. Or you can go totally old school Dracula if you want to do that. And our first one, I went old school with it because I do enjoy the older style of vampires. Old-fashioned vampires.
Yeah, I enjoyed Knight's Black Agents. I think it's a great setting if you really like vampire stuff and you like horror. And you can go as scary or not scary as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because with vampire horror, it's not always scary, if at least to a horror person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not always scary. The concept of someone who drinks blood to stay alive, yes, that is scary. But sometimes vampire stuff, they feel a little more human than when you're doing a straight up horror.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really comes down to what you're trying to achieve. I think movie-wise, and I don't want to get deep in the weeds with this because I want this to be something we talk about as a episode, but the Evil Dead movies, one issue that I have is the newer Evil Dead movies are really hardcore horror movies, Whereas the old ones have ash and are a little bit more tongue-in-cheek. They're humorous. And it's jarring for me a little bit. And I think vampires suffer from the same thing, where it's you either have a really hardcore vampire story, or there's this like weird, we know what we're watching. There's not a lot of depth to it. And Kenneth Haidt, who wrote Night's Black Agent, is one of these guys who writes a lot of horror. He writes a lot of Trail of Cthulhu. He wrote a lot of stuff for GURPS. He's very prolific. Vampire the Masquerade, I believe he wrote for, and does a great job of really giving you the toolkit you need to make the vampire story that you want to make, which you don't see a lot of. Most of the time, it's just not there. So it's bugging me. I'm going to check. I have to check what the other one was.
Well, while you're checking, okay, I'm going to go on a side story. So one of the vampire series that I really appreciated is the Anne Rice vampire books.
Right.
And in Interview with a Vampire, the thing that I really love is that you have this reporter. He's interviewing a guy who he thinks he's a vampire, because he doesn't believe the vampires are real. And he's interviewing this guy, and you're getting this guy's whole backstory, and you're getting attached to this vampire character. You're seeing the struggle between becoming a complete monster and hanging on to some of your humanity. And as the guy is sitting there, it starts to dawn on him that it's almost dawn, and he's sitting with a vampire who's not fed yet.
Yeah.
And it's this really slow realization, and he doesn't get attacked or anything like that, but that tension that's there for that moment is, oh crap, this guy doesn't just think he's a vampire. Vampires are real. This is an actual thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
He hasn't fed yet, and it's what time?
Time to run. That's what time it is. It's time to run. Speaking of monsters, one of the allegiances in Sword of the Serpentine are monsters. There are lots of different monsters, and Sorcerer's Cabal. We didn't even touch on that. Sorcerer's Cabals are groups of wizards and sorcerers, and sorcery hurts Denari in the city. So if you cast a spell, corruption happens. And when you cast a spell, it either hurts you, you can have it hurt yourself, or you can have it hurt somebody in your party, which I think is a clever way to do it. It's funny how many times you end up using sorcery. It's like the Call of Cthulhu thing where it's, look, I understand that Mouthful of Worms is not a good thing to cast, but it's the only thing that's going to stop the cultist from finishing the ritual. So I need to cast this horrible spell to make this work.
And I know this spell is ultimately, like casting spells is ultimately going to drive me insane, but...
but I have to do it because I have to save everyone, which is, that's selfless. It's a selfless act. But I've enjoyed sorcery in the Sword and the Serpentine, say that six times fast, canon, just because of that weird duality of, oh, I need to do this thing, but it's going to hurt Denari. And because
you have to balance that.
Because I guess the way that it goes is that Denari, the sorcery was really used a lot by the serpent people. And when they died out and went away, she appeared. And so that's why, at least if I'm remembering correctly, but it's the monster part. And you can be allies with monsters. Instead of fighting with them, maybe you have a relatively nice troll that you know somewhere or something that you can talk to. And like, I had a hard day. It's been really difficult. And I was wondering if I could hang out at your pad for a while. I brought a goat, whatever works. So anyway, first I'd like to thank, before we sign off, everybody who got involved with chat, Bowman and Dorklord and Hypersmurf, we appreciate you talking. And if you didn't talk, we appreciate you too. If you're just hanging out, I do that all the time. I they call it lurking. I don't necessarily like that because I don't know. Lurking sounds a little weird. To me, it's
creepy, but
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't want to interact. You just want
to. You want to watch the show. You don't have to.
Watch the show.
Yeah. You don't have to. You don't have to watch. You don't have to interact if you don't want to. But we appreciate both. We appreciate that you stopped by and said hello. If you are not a follower, become a follower. If you are a follower, think about becoming a subscriber. Check out 12 Sided Stories on our website, where you can find all of our links, all of our shows. And the Fear Itself show that we forgot was, oh crap, I just forgot it again. Awesome. Remembrance, it was the Australian one.
Yes, but I don't remember.
It was the Australian one. God damn it. Give me just 1 second and I will.
That one was fun. That one was really fun.
It was before Dead Drop. Shit. Replaced. Replaced was the other Fear Itself. Okay. If you're listening to this because you really like Sword and the Serpentine, check out Blades of Eversync, which was our first game. Bookhound Bounty Hunters, which was our second game, which had assassin librarians hunting down expensive books or banned books from people.
They knew the cost of the price. Returning it.
Right. You return the book or you die. That's basically, some people get a fine. Some people get a shiv. I don't know. But so that was our second story. And then our third one is Candlestick Crimes, which we finished the first season of and we're going to do more of. Our next new show is The Hidden North, which is a Vaisen game. It starts soon, like Wednesday. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We enjoyed Vaisen a lot as well. But after that game is done, we're going back. We always go back to Gumshoe. We're always going to be doing Gumshoe stuff. It's a lot of fun. So if you enjoy that stuff, look at our back catalog. We have a lot of things going on that you can listen to. And Michelle, where are you at throughout the World Wide Web?
Throughout the interwebs.
Yeah.
If you're ever web surfing.
No, I don't. Not because I'm not old enough to have heard it, but because my memory is slipping away. Go ahead.
I know. No, if you're ever on the internet, my handle on all the socials is Michulhu, M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U, and you can find me there.
And mine is Plate Mail Games. I'm on all the different socials. And then the show is 12 Sided Stories, the number 12 Sided Stories. And then our website is 12 Sided Stories, all written out. I need to actually get links for all of this that can pop up in chat whenever I want. I don't have those because I've been lazy, but I know that it can be done. Thank you so much for listening. And if you're listening on the podcast version of this, which will come out on Monday, thank you so much for listening there too. We will see you next time. Have a great, the Patreon. Yeah. If you're on Patreon, you get, thank you, Bowman. Join the Patreon and you can listen to Vaisen now. And because everybody on Patreon gets the episodes free. Oh, and Bowman's playing this very soon. Have a good game tonight, man. I'm envious because it's a great system. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.